Welcome back, everyone. This is the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. I'm your host, Scott, joined by Rich with your average everyday Chiefs talk. All of our episodes are available on most streaming platforms. Just search for the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. You can also check us out on our social media pages, such as Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the latest episodes and up-to-date Chiefs news. So, obviously, we're now past week 9, which the Chiefs had their recent home game against the Tennessee Titans on Sunday Night Football, which was, at first, you thought it was not going to be a great game there towards the end. It turned into being an absolute great game, obviously going overtime, the Chiefs pulling out. But obviously, me being there was pretty nuts. But Rich, you know, as far as you watching it at home, and what were your thoughts, you know, obviously that fourth quarter going into overtime and all that?
I mean, it's something that you expected, right? You expected the Titans to play that kind of defense, rely heavily on the run game, maybe not so much in the rookie's arm. But from a pure emotion perspective, I mean, it delivered in every way from a Sunday night or a primetime game, right? With emotions, a little bit of success, some struggles, and literally a nail biter down to the end. And more times than not, we definitely got some Mahomes magic that got us over the hump and led us to victory.
Right. Some memories we'll definitely get to talk about here in a moment. Speaking of primetime, obviously, if no one has heard, the Chiefs Chargers game for week 11 that's coming up here next weekend has been moved to Sunday Night Football. So instead of it being a late afternoon game, that is now a Sunday Night Football game. So that puts the Chiefs at 6 primetime games for the year. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it depends on how the NFL counts Thursday Night Football towards this or not, because obviously if you count Thursday Night Football, it's 6. If you don't, it's 5. I believe in the current, at least deal, I believe it's only each team can have up to 5 nights. So I think that's why a lot of people are saying that the Broncos-Chiefs game that's scheduled for currently slated for week 14, which is Sunday Night Football, might get flexed out for another different team or another different game, just because obviously the Chiefs-Broncos, you know, maybe before the season, people thought that probably would have been a good matchup to watch on Sunday Night Football. But with them flexing games late in the season, you could possibly see Jets-Bills for that Sunday Night Football or even Giants-Eagles. But going forward, in this new TV deal that starts next year, it will have a max of 7 primetime games per team. So be interesting to see, like I said, if they do count that Thursday Night Football as part of it or not, and if the Chiefs do get slated out of that spot week 14 or, you know, something else happens where they get put into another game. But what are your thoughts, Rich, on – I know some people – I don't know, maybe not Chiefs fans, but even some Chiefs fans have said this. Like, they're like, oh, I'm tired of the Chiefs playing on primetime football. I'm like, I know they're late games and people got to work the next day, but, I mean, it's getting, you know, Chiefs, like, national media attention in that spotlight for those games. But, I mean, I'm pretty sure – you're probably on there with me. I mean, we pretty much enjoy these late games. I mean, I do, at least for most part. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a season ticket holder, but I don't go to a lot of games, right? You know, I kind of explained that before, my thought process there. So I completely get the sentiment that people express when we play late Sundays, Mondays, even Thursdays. Completely understand that. But without a doubt, from a how successful the team is on primetime. I mean, Mahomes, I can't remember his exact record, right? But I think he's maybe lost 2 games, the Bills game.
Yep.
And, oh, it's
Chargers?
Right there.
Was there a Chargers game he lost in primetime?
No, actually, I think it was the Raiders game like 3 years ago on a Thursday night when I kept throwing it to Jared Cook or Darren Waller, one of those two. Maybe that's it. I have to go back and look.
Right.
But yeah, so and I do like the idea, though, like from how I go about my day, I can do everything needed during the day because sometimes when they play at 12, it's like the day breaks up for me, right? Like I have to do everything I need to do in the morning, watch the game for 3 hours, and then, you know, now since it gets dark at 5, it's like, okay, now I still got to go do some of the things, but I can't do anything I'm supposed to do outside, right? And right. I get that's what Saturday's for. But, yeah, no, so I enjoy it from a how well the team plays. And I guess as long as I'm not going to the game, you know, I'm fine with it too.
Yeah. Like for me, I mean, obviously I didn't get home till like 12:30, 1 o'clock. And it was funny cause, Monday morning hit and I like, when I logged into work, I'm like, I told my boss, I said, there's not going to be any meetings today for me cause I'm not talking cause I have no voice. So in that aspect, I could see it because, like, you know, if you go on to the games, kind of like me, you know, for the most part, at least for most of the games that I go to, being a season ticket holder, and you're there the next day or have to work the next morning, like, you're tired. You're tired. You might not have a voice depending on how much you yelled, you know, or if, you know, you were drinking a lot or that, you know, et cetera, from stuff, you know, from the game. So in that aspect, I could see it a little being a little bit different too. Obviously, you from watching it from home, you know, you don't have to, like, you know, beat traffic or anything like that. Or, you know, if you had a buddy's house, you probably don't have to still, you know, probably be that far away from, you know, being home or whatnot from having to go to work the next day. But yeah, I definitely could see both sides of it for sure. On that.
Yeah, I mean, and at the end of the day, like I said, I think the biggest benefit is Mahomes is really good on primetime games.
Yeah, and like, and I think we had seen in our chats, and I think I put something in there, you know, someone mentioned that when it kind of makes some people older, makes them feel like really old, right? Because when they used to watch Michael Jordan, they might have been too young to really realize a lot of the stuff that he did in his prime. And now a lot of people, I mean, maybe not a lot of people, but there's people out there that think that Mahomes, you know, kind of, you know, it's kind of like that same way as the stuff that he pulls off, the stuff that like Jordan did, they kind of missed out on that. And now they're kind of, you know, every single time they see him, they're kind of, you know, basically making sure that they see, you know, see as much as possible on that, that you might not ever see again, you know? So it's like, especially Chiefs fans for one, two as well, but they, definitely want to save those moments for what you have right now.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, without a doubt, Mahomes has gotten to that Kobe, Jordan, you know, I guess you could say even Brady, right? And the mentality where they get in a tight situation, they are more than likely going to come out on top. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess this is a dig at LeBron, right, since I didn't mention him. But, you know, when you've lost that many finals, I don't think you have the clutch gene that Jordan, Kobe, even Tom Brady has, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So, without a doubt, like, our confidence level as Chiefs fans that we are never truly out of a game, even in that Super Bowl game, right, where we lost to the Bucks and we were down so many touchdowns there, like, heading into the beginning of the fourth quarter. I was like, there's still a possibility, even though realistically in that game, because of the offensive line, there was probably no chance, right? So,
he was still trying to make throws.
He's
diving and everything and throwing the ball. I'm like, hey, it didn't matter. The game could have been 50-0 and he still would have been out there doing that. I mean, that's just incredible because he likes to compete. He likes to win. But like I said, that was one of the worst games for him. Because I believe what they said on the TV, if I'm not mistaken, he's only had two games, including playoffs, that they've scored under 9 points. And it was the Super Bowl, and it was the Titans game last year. He's always scored at least, I think, want to say, above 10 points or whatever. Those are the only two games he scored under that in his career. So that's even just saying that for what he's probably played in about, including playoffs and Super Bowl, he's played, 60, 65 games, something like that. So that's incredible to even say that part. All right, so speaking of the more into that Chiefs-Titans game, where the Chiefs came out with that win 20-17 in overtime, I'll send it over to you, Rich, for the stats from the game.
All right, so final score, Chiefs 20, Titans 17, takes the Titans to 5-3 record. The Chiefs are now 6-2. Heading into the team stats, start out with Tennessee. Their total yards was 229 yards. Net passing yards is only 57. And on the ground, they had 172 yards. The Titans did not have any turnovers. And the time of possession for them was 26 and 23, right? So 26 minutes, 23 seconds. For the Chiefs, they had a total of 499 yards, 422 in the air, 77 on the ground. And if you guys don't remember this amazing stat, Malik Willis threw the ball 16 times, completed 5 passes. Patrick Mahomes threw the ball 68 times, completed 43 passes.
Nuts.
For 446, right? I think, I can't remember that graphic, right, that they popped up, but I think this is the second most attempts in an NFL game. I think someone had like 70 or something like that.
Yeah, Drew Bledsoe had 70.
Was it Bledsoe?
Mm-hmm.
So, Yeah, I mean, the stats, let's say on that alone, right? So getting into the specific player stats, Malik Willis's line, again, 5 of 16 for 80 yards in the air. He was sacked three times. His longest completion was a 48-yarder, and he had an overall quarterback rating of 49, 40, sorry, 49. He definitely moved the ball on the ground a bit, right? And he definitely scared us there early on with that read option play. But he had 8 for 40 on the ground. Derrick Henry, of course, led the way for them on the ground. 17 rushes, 115 yards, two touchdowns. He had that big 56-yard scramble. That let's say maybe he probably ran out of gas after how he runs it in. So from a receiving perspective, crazy, crazy stat, right? That no Tennessee wide receiver had a reception in this game.
Nuts.
Dontre Hilliard, a running back, Son Haskins, also a running back, and then Okongwu, one of their like backup tight ends, and Austin Hooper were all the ones with catches, with Okongwu having that 48-yard scramble there, right? That was Malik Willis's longest completion. They also have not had a touchdown, right, by a receiver this year. It reminds me of those long, hard days of, Dwayne Bowen, a wide receiver, I think didn't have a touchdown for like 16 weeks or something like that.
Yeah, and that was when wasn't that when we had Dwayne Bowe and he still
Yeah.
didn't catch a touchdown? Yeah, as I thought.
Yeah. I can't remember who the quarterback was. Maybe that's another trivia we need to go look up. So as I mentioned with Patrick, right, 43-68, 4-46 in the air, one touchdown, one interception. He got sacked four times. His quarterback rating was 80.9. He also had, as I'm sure everyone remembers, six carries for 63 yards and a touchdown. And we'll talk about, let's say, some of his scrambles. None of the nobody else. Well, I guess Isaiah Pacheco had five, but everyone else had under four carries. Clyde had four, Isaiah had five, and then Jerick had three carries. They all totaled about 14 yards rushing. So not the greatest day on the ground for either of those running backs, right? Give it up to the Titans defense. They were amazing. But receiving wise, Travis Kelce led the way with 10 receptions, 106 yards. He now is tied with Gronk on number of 100-yard games for a tight end. Juju Smith-Schuster had 10 receptions for 88 yards. McColl had 6 for 79 and a touchdown. And then a couple other guys, right? Noah Gray made a great catch there late in the game. Kadarius Toney got some looks early on as well, right? So that's what it looks like from an offensive perspective. And then really just finishing out both teams as high-end defensive stats. Danico Autry had two sacks for the Titans. Mario Edwards and DeMarcus Walker also had sacks. And then Carlos Dunlap had one and a half. He shared one with Chris Jones, and Kalen Saunders also had a sack as well. The lone interception of the game, right, was Roger McCreary's interception there on Patrick Mahomes. And then last but not least, the Titans, of course, you would expect, right, a team that's really, really good defensively. It was offense versus defense. Most of their guys led the way with tackles, right? Kevin Byard being their highest tackle obtainer with 12, 6 and 6, 6 solo, 6 assisted. And then for the Chiefs, Kalen Saunders and no, so Kalen Saunders had 6, and then Willie Gay and L'Jarius Sneed both had 5 tackles in this game. So maybe Nick Bolton wasn't up there, but like I said, it was just a weird game from an offensive perspective for the Titans. So very, very physical.
Yeah, for sure. Because I mean, I think you were saying just, it was a weird game in general. So interesting that obviously Bolton only ended up having what, three tackles, which normally he hits, high single digits or what, almost double digits, for each game. So yeah, I think just because of how they ran the ball and it was just kind of running everywhere, he kind of wasn't involved a whole lot. But Saunders definitely stepped up pretty big for sure on that running attack for them.
Yeah, arguably his best game probably in his tenure as a Chief.
Yeah, which it's weird to say this, but since Wharton's went down on IR, he stepped in pretty nice. And I think
Right.
since Wharton has been out, like he's been that really good fill there in that defensive tackle spot. And I've noticed that they've played like Derek Nnadi a lot less, and they're just obviously just switching out between Saunders and Jones, and even sometimes you'll see three guys. I mean, I don't know if you noticed that too. You'll see three ends at one point in the game. They play a lot of Mike Dana inside. Sometimes they play Carl Loftus inside, have Jones and Dunlap on the outside. So they do a lot of switching up on that line. Doesn't matter how big you are or if you're a defensive tackle or you're a defensive end, you're playing multiple spots right now. So it's kind of cool that they've seen that they've mixed that up a little bit. All right, so going from the highlights from the game, first of all, I will point off that I did predict 24-20, so I wasn't spot on, but I was pretty close. I was the closest I've probably gotten this year as far as score-wise. I would point that out. But anyways, so obviously, you know, how the game kind of started out, you know, as far as with the Chiefs on their first drive and came away with that that field goal from Butker, it was about 23 yards. Couldn't get in the end zone there. A couple attempts. I think actually a penalty kind of pushed us back there. I think it was like a holding penalty that kind of pushed us back there when we got close to the goal line. So ended up coming away there with a field goal on that first drive. And then obviously we stuffed the Titans there on their first drive, came back down and scored our first touchdown in the game with that touchdown pass from Mahomes to Hardman with that 7-yard pass, which made it 9-0. Yes, I do say 9-0 because then Butker does miss the extra point after. So did not start off well with that. So, you know, going off of that, then it pretty much picks up from there, you know, as far as the Titans are running the ball more. Derrick Henry, you know, pretty much, I think on their next drive, you know, bust up a run, I believe. Yeah, it was for 56 yards. I literally hit the first play of their next drive. He ran for 56 yards right through pretty good blocks. He had a nice hole to run through, which ended up setting up eventually a Derrick Henry 1-yard touchdown. That was the other one. That was the second one that scored was when Derrick Henry ran for 56 yards. Sorry, the first one when they got up 7-0, he still had a good yard, I think like a 24-yard run off that drive, which that ended up being a direct snap touchdown for Derrick Henry there at the 4-yard line of the Chiefs, and that ended up being 9-7 there. And then, obviously, like I said, when the Chiefs did not do anything on the next drive, the ensuing drive is when he had that long run for 56 yards and then set up another Derrick Henry touchdown, making it 14-9 at that point. And from there on out, at least for a good while, it's just back and forth of good defense, I would say, on both sides of the ball. Because obviously it ends up being, I believe at halftime, it ends up being 14-9. Obviously, I think the Chiefs had a chance there towards the end of the first half to kind of get some points. But they ended up pretty much stumbling out there around the 50-yard line. So they didn't end up getting anything. But at that point, obviously, it's 14-9. It's a little bit disappointing the Chiefs didn't get anything more at that point because, obviously, Tennessee won the coin toss at the beginning of the game, so they elected to receive in the second half. So, obviously, you're thinking, okay, Tennessee is probably going to come out in the second half and just run Derrick Henry. They were doing so well at that point with him that they were – if he wasn't running, they were doing a fake handoff to him, and Malik Willis was doing – he was going left, he was going right with, you know, quarterbacks around the end run. So – you know, Rich, at that point, obviously being 14-9, Titans get the ball back in the second half. Were you kind of looking forward to, okay, now it's time for them to kind of just take the clock with them and just run pretty much? What do you think?
100%. I mean, and that's what they did, right? And ultimately, I think that's why they weren't able to do anything else and didn't win the game, is they couldn't do anything else, right? So 100%, that was the thought process. I was like, man, they may not throw the ball at all, right, in the second half. And they almost didn't.
Right. And that's the thing. So, you know, obviously the theme, at least of the second half, we noticed is not only the defense played well, obviously starting in the second half, like better than they did in the first half, even though, of course, towards the end of the first half, I think on the last Titans drive, like I said, they were starting to, you know, play better. But the second half has started really well. But you started noticing a thing with the Titans is Derrick Henry, they would hand it off to him on first down. If he got maybe 2 yards, you know, he might be there on second down, but he might not. They might have already took him out, you know, to put in Hilliard in or for them to start passing. But most of the time, at least at the beginning of that second quarter, or sorry, second half, they would, you know, run him first and second down. But then if they're like third and six, or even more, they're taking him out of the game. And it's just, right. it amazes me because he's the best player they have on the field. And uh-huh. as the drives they got going, the more drives they got in the second half, the less you saw of him, which didn't make any sense to me. You know, because at least one of those third downs, I would have given him a chance to run for it. But, you know, we obviously never saw that happen. So you saw less and less of him in the second half, which just kind of boggled me a lot. But as we get back to, you know, some of the stuff that happened, obviously, in the second half, the reason why they end up getting up 17-9 there in the second half was Mahomes made a – it was kind of like – I think – I don't know how you looked at it on the TV, but it looked like he kind of just was – he threw it too quickly. Kelce just didn't react in time enough, and it kind of just hit Kelce in the hands, and it kind of went up. But what were your kind of thoughts there? It kind of was – it kind of almost was like a quick play because they made – if I'm not mistaken, like right before that, he threw to Kelce for 12 yards. And I felt like right after that, it was a quick play. And I just don't know if they were ready, but what are your thoughts on that, like kind of back-to-back play interception right there?
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know if it was a combination of Travis not turning fast enough, maybe Patrick throwing it too fast as you did. But yeah, it definitely caught him off guard. It bounces right off of him, pops up. So yeah, I mean, only they would know, right? And exactly how that was supposed to be run in that situation. I think, let's say Patrick's, the speed he put on that ball and where he put it, I think didn't help the situation, but ultimately if you get your hands on it, right, you're supposed to catch it. Now I know Travis Kelce was getting mugged all game, as we remember on, that conversion there, a 2-point conversion there at the end of the game.
Right.
So I know that had to do with a little bit because I do remember him coming out of the break and him taking a while to turn, which we know Travis Kelce turns way too easily and, you know, often catches the ball, turns up the field and is, you know, getting good amount of yak. So yeah, it was one where you kind of expected that, you know, if there is a game or something like that, it's going to happen because of how physical the Titans defense is. It was this game and, you know, thankfully it didn't stop us from winning the game.
Yeah, it didn't cost us a lot because obviously they got a field goal off that, you know, to make it 17-9, an 8-point game, but they only got 8 yards like right after they got that because I think same thing happened. They ran a few plays. Derrick Henry didn't get nothing, and they, you know, tried to pass, didn't get nothing, kicked the field goal, go up 17-9. So then on the suing drive after Mahomes' interception for the Chiefs, that's when, you know, we had a pretty good drive there, 10 plays, 55 yards, but then you know, we have another mishap with, you know, Butker missing a 47-yard field goal, and he's normally good from almost anywhere in the field for the most part. I mean, he's struggled a little bit since he's gotten back. Someone thinks he has COVID or something like that, but, you know, it's weird that all of a sudden, since he's come back from the injury, he's had a couple of, misses here and there. So, obviously at that point, you know, at least me there in the stadium, we're like, oh man, this is not good. This is one of those games. It is one of those games where you can't get it right. Just you can't score, or something's happening with your kicker, or something's going on. So from there on out, for a while, it was just literally battle of the defenses. It was a good like battle for at least the next five drives, so on and so forth. And then the Chiefs obviously have a long drive. Probably one of the most impressive drives I've seen this year by Patrick Mahomes alone. The first one, because there's multiple ones here on this drive, where it was third and 17, and it looked like when he was so it looked like when he found he took off, it looked like some of the Tennessee players, at least if I remember correctly, when I was watching some of the recap, like the linebacker that was kind of spying on Mahomes, right, in case he ran, he kind of stopped. So Mahomes kind of saw that and then, you know, made his way eventually for a 20-yard scramble through, you know, different little moves he's made, or, you know, a little block here and there. But such an impressive run that even the stadium was going nuts after that 20-yard run. So you were thinking kind of right then, you're like, okay, he made that nice run against the Titans on that Super Bowl, you know, the Super Bowl winning team in that game against the Titans in the playoffs. In that AFC Championship game, you're kind of thinking like, that was kind of similar, but, you know, it wasn't as similar. And then so then he tops himself with when it was third and nine at Tennessee 14, and he just does like literally almost the exact impression of what he did in the AFC Championship game with that nice run to score a touchdown. And then obviously it goes up 17-15, Chiefs need a 2-point conversion. So you're obviously thinking like probably they'll go to Kelce here or they'll end up doing something. Well, I believe this is where isn't there a couple penalties for that 2-point conversion?
Yeah, there was two back-to-back, right, if I'm not mistaken. First a hold on Mecole Hardman as he is motioning out, right, and then the mug of Kelce.
That's right.
Where Kelce eventually takes the guy's helmet off.
Right, so there's those two back-to-back scenarios where they're where I think it's, like I said, that first 2-point conversion, there was penalties on both sides where just kind of replayed it. And then, obviously, like you mentioned, the second try where Kelce had taken the safety's helmet off, but they called it defensive holding to put the ball at the 1-yard line. And then Mahomes just does another Mahomes play, obviously just sees that there was a hole open there in the corner of the end zone, takes it in, gets a 2-point conversion, 17-17. And I don't know how you're feeling at that point. I felt that after like all that happened in that whole sequence of that whole drive, and the ending of that, I felt like we're going to win at that point. There was no doubt in my mind whether this was in regular time or this was in overtime at this point, like we were going to win. I don't know how you felt.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those feelings where you're like, man, we can't lose this game now, right, after that. And I sat there thinking, like, the Mahomes magic happened. We have to seal it and win it. And then we go in overtime, and I'm like, oh, we get the coin toss. But I was still like, ooh, yikes.
Yeah, so speaking of coin toss, so obviously, there was back and forth punts there in the fourth quarter and nothing ended up happening. A couple throws that Mahomes even missed Kelce wide open on one that would have been nice to end the game there in regulation, but ended up didn't. So, going up into, overtime, that's when, Chris Jones went out there for the coin toss and he got it. He was like a kid, like really excited like when they got it. Right. He was so hyped. And the Chiefs got the ball. So that's when a lot of cool things end up happening on that drive for the Chiefs, which, probably get to here in a minute as far as some of our favorite moments of the game. But obviously, Kelce makes, a nice grab. I believe it was on his drive, right? He, on the first drive there in overtime, where he kind of, the ball was kind of like pretty much out of his
behind him.
And he turns around and pretty much picks it out of thin air and grabs it. Comes down with it, and then not only that, but a couple plays later, Mahomes is scrambling. He throws a pass to Noah Gray, which like kind of tips him in the hands in the air, and it kind of comes back and he catches it. So, a couple good plays that both Chiefs tight ends make, and then obviously didn't end up scoring, but Butker got that kick there for 28 yards to put up 20-17, which it then leads to the Titans. And at that point, Titans got to throw the ball. They can't use Derrick Henry, and they pretty much just didn't do anything. Kind of reminded me of that Raiders game we had at home when we set the record for loudest stadium when we kept sacking. I forget the quarterback. Oh, it might have been Derek Carr. When we kept, maybe it wasn't that game. I was thinking of it might have been Jamarcus Russell because it was one where we kept sacking him like two or three times in a row, and it wasn't like third and like 40, something like that. So it kind of reminded me of that might have been Jamarcus Russell. It might have been a long time ago when I thought about that, but
it reminded me 3rd and 49 or something like that.
It was something ridiculous like that. I was like, it almost
no.
Felt
you
like
know,
that.
I think it was Derek Carr.
It was okay. I couldn't remember who it was.
Another one we need to jot down.
I need to look that one up. But anyways, I remember feeling that way, even though it wasn't that much. I mean, they went to 3rd and 21, and ultimately 4th and 26. They couldn't do anything, and obviously Snead had that almost pick six to end the game, which would have been incredible. The whole stadium would have went nuts if he ended up catching that and taking it in, but he dropped that pass. But that was the game over right there, and yeah, final score of the 20-17. But an amazing, I would say, in the fourth quarter in overtime, which even though Mahomes put his team on the back and always got us the points, I still think the defense played incredible through that second half in overtime. What were your thoughts there towards the end of the game?
Yeah, I mean, there at the end, like you said, right, the defense really stepped up. And I shouldn't say really stepped up. I mean, they really stepped up the whole second half. But right. Just, I mean, you knew they had to go a long way. You knew that more than likely, if they didn't get a humongous game on the ground on the first play, that they were going to have to pass, which means, you know, your linemen are pinning their ears. They're going after the quarterback as much as they could. I mean, they created havoc every single play, right? I mean, that situation, you can drop basically seven in coverage, you know, make the rookie decipher the coverage and try to understand where the appropriate space is. They hadn't had a receiver catch a pass all single game. So the odds were in our favor at that moment, right? I mean, and the defense, without a doubt, capitalized and really sealed the game there.
All right, for sure. So moving on to our favorite moments for the game, I guess I'll start with you. What do you got for as far as your favorite moment? Even I think it kind of mentioned it here a short time ago.
Yeah, so of course there are a ton. And, you know, I could have always go with the Mahomes, right, to still the easy one, still the layup. But for me, I think Travis Kelce's catch, I think that might be the best catch I've ever seen him, aside from that back shoulder throw or back shoulder catch that, you know, we did. I said we did, like I participated there, but that he did versus the Bills in the playoffs last year, right, to win the game.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, just the body control, I mean, it was behind him, you know, one, obviously catching the pass, moving forward and everything and completing the process, making it a catch. That was very, very crucial for us. So that would be my favorite moment, is Travis Kelce's really nice catch there at the end of the game.
Which, you know, you mentioned it, and, you know, I'm going to go with it as mine, even though it's a pretty obvious one, but it's the Mahomes magic on that drive there in the fourth quarter, really putting his team on the back there at that point. He was like, you know what, we can't run the ball. I can run the ball. Can't get anybody open at that point. You know, I'm just going to take it. I can take it for me, and making those three incredible plays. I mean, really the two incredible plays, but obviously the two-point conversion, which really tied it up. Just incredible to see that from Mahomes. And it just seems like it seemed on that drive, because of, you know, maybe what happened with Josh Allen earlier in the game that he had played. And just after seeing Mahomes doing that, it seemed like he was the for sure MVP front runner at this point. After that drive, it just seemed like, what more can this guy do? And a really, you know, at that point, a really crappy game for the most part, at least the way how the Chiefs have played on offense. So for him to kind of step up and make that happen was kind of really awesome to see. As far as your game ball, who you got?
It's hard not to give it to the guy that really put the team on his back and won it for us, right? I mean, of course, the defense played lights out in the second half. Mm-hmm. Noah Gray, Travis Kelce all did great things as well. But, yeah, Patrick Mahomes single-handedly willing us back to victory, or willing us to the victory, willing us back to winning the game. Without a doubt, you know, I think Mahomes has to get one.
So, yeah, I mean, like I said, I would go with Mahomes, but just for sake, to choose something different, I'm going with defense, just because the 22 yards that they gave up between the second half and overtime is just impressive. Obviously, Derrick Henry was getting his, you know, in the first half, and then all of a sudden they found a way to more or less stop him towards the end of that first half and all the rest of the game, where you didn't see him on the field much, when probably the Titans probably should have used him more often. So I think that really kind of changed the tone of the game at that point. So defense really deserved this one just as much, I think. And I have, as far as player disappointed, you know, it's kind of becoming a theme with a little bit of the team here, at least in my opinion. I had to give it to Harrison Butker just because of that field goal and the extra point, even though, you know, he's still better than most kickers in the league. I mean, he really is. Right. He's just, I don't know if he's just trying to find his groove back. You know, with that ankle injury that he suffered in week one, I think he will get it back. Like, I don't have any complaints that, you know, he's going to consistently be this bad. You know, I did mention that it's time to admit that the Chiefs do have a kicker problem. They do, in some aspects they do. And it is concerning that at this point, you know, he's having these issues, but do I think it's going to, you know, towards the end of the season or anything where I have those issues. I don't. I think he'll come out of it. But I think right now, you know, what we've seen from him, I think he's still going to ultimately be consistent for, you know, him making field goals and whatnot. But at least as far as on this game, some of those things could it end up, you know, costing us the game. I mean, it's kind of tough to really say that. But, you know, sometimes when you take points off the board like that, which has 4 points, I mean, it's possible that it really could have came down to that. But that's what I had as far as on this game.
So, yeah, I mean, I completely agree with you there, right? When you are paying your kicker that much money, you know, you expect them to be clutch, right? People talk about the ankle injury and all that stuff. And as, you know, someone who is, I guess I consider myself an expert at kicking a ball, even though it's not a football, even though I did do some kicking of a football, right, in my younger days.
Right.
I completely get that, you know, his messed up foot is the plant foot, right? And the plant foot is everything. But, like, in watching him, I don't see plant foot being the issue. I think it's just pure accuracy, right? Which, yes, the plant foot does impact that, but it's more about your striking foot. Like I said, in watching him, I don't see it affecting him. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, only he knows what's going on there. He had some key misses last year, right, where we were in a little bit of tougher situations because of missed extra points and field goals. But then at the end of the year, he really came on. So I guess it's better to miss him, you know, this week or last week,
right,
than to miss him in the playoffs, right? So get out all the unideal stuff out now. But I'll go to a different front, right? So from most disappointing, I would say Andrew Wiley, but I think everyone understands that Andrew Wiley is not a starting right tackle in the NFL. He does well. There are moments he does really, really well. Even in this game, you know, he did really, really well in some moments. But, you know, it's the guy that I had a lot more faith in, and he's gone through a gauntlet. Our entire offensive line has gone through an absolute, you know, gauntlet of defensive linemen, Tennessee being no exception. They've got some amazing pass rushers and overall as defense. But Orlando Brown Jr., I don't know if you remember the play where my man got put on skates and absolutely bull rushed and tossed. I can't remember what defensive end it was. I think it was Mario Edwards. I want to say it was Mario Edwards Jr. I have to go back and look at it. But, yeah, I mean, I think we all knew that Orlando Brown wasn't, let's say, maybe a top 10 tackle in the NFL, top 10 left tackle in the NFL. That's why a contract was not, let's say, agreed to, is because he thought he was, you know, should be the highest paid. And by all means, you know, get your money, right? Don't speak on other folks' money, but you have to back it up, right? So now he bet on himself. He signed the franchise tag, said, I'm going to play. You guys are probably going to pay me at the end of the year because I'm going to do so well. So far this year, I don't think he's lived up, or maybe even lived up let's say maybe not the right word, right? Because we know he's not Trent Williams. You know he's not, I forget the guy in New Orleans that went to Miami. Was it Tariq Armstead? You know, he's maybe not like top three, but if you're going to be a top 10 left tackle in this league, you can't, some of the things that happens to him, you can't do those, right? And again, this game, kind of a continuance of what has happened. I get the defensive line is really, really good, but if you're going to be a top left tackle, you have to be able to handle those things, right? So
right.
For me, I would say Orlando Brown Jr. because Andrew Wiley, like, that's kind of what you expect out of normally a backup right tackle.
Right. And, you know, so, you know, going forward, obviously, when we talk about week 10 with Jacksonville, they get a little bit of a breather. I mean, yeah, they do have Josh Allen, right, on the defensive end.
But and Trayvon Walker, man, like, that kid, the first pick overall from Jacksonville.
Yeah.
Man, those two, like, they're not producing sacks, but they're definitely getting pressure. So, you know, to your point, right, it might be letting up, but it's definitely not easy.
A little bit letting up, yeah. I mean, like I said, I wouldn't say a whole lot. But, yeah, right. I will say, you mean, they might get a little bit of a breather, but not too much. But we'll have to see how they handle, you know, them upcoming this Sunday. All right, so heading into our final thoughts topic, you know, kind of we were talking about this a couple weeks back about who, you know, which head coaches around the league might be the first, you know, couple to get the boot, quote unquote, say. And it's funny because we mentioned Matt Rhule, you know, being one of the first ones, and then the next morning it happens. So, you know, now we're obviously up to the second coach that was let go, and that's Frank Wright for the Indianapolis Colts, which they end up naming former Pro Bowl center Jeff Saturday, right? I believe is how he has his name, for head coach. And that's kind of shocking, to be honest, on that point, because I don't know how much coaching experience he really has. You know, I mean, as far as other than being like assistant and whatnot, I wasn't sure all of his you know, background with that. But as far as, you know, Frank Wright moving on, and probably wasn't what we expected to be next happened, you know, as far as on him. But what are your thoughts on the Colts and firing Frank Wright?
So Frank Wright was an interesting one. It's one I talked about, let's say, with, you know, a lot of my buddies about if he was going to be fired this year. If so, why? If not, why? And quarterback is everything in the league, right? We everyone knows that. You probably aren't going to be successful. The Titans being as successful as they have been with Ryan Tannehill is an amazing feat. Same with, I guess, San Francisco and Jimmy G. But aside from that, you got to have an elite quarterback, right? And the Colts, they definitely tried, right? After Andrew Luck retired on them prematurely, they haven't recovered. They've, you know, gone after some really old quarterbacks, and Rivers, Wentz. Well, I shouldn't say Wentz, he's not old, but Rivers, Ryan, and now Sam Ellinger, who is definitely maybe a third string quarterback in the NFL. So, and that's the reality of the situation. Now, Jonathan Taylor getting hurt, their line not being as good. I wouldn't say that's as much as on the coach as it is maybe the GM and not, you know, getting a better offensive line. So I think maybe a little premature, because, you know, how much better are you going to get hiring a coach this, you know, this week? And on an interim, you could have, there's several other people that I could use on the staff. So I don't know. I think, first of all, fine, right, might have been a little premature. You might as well just wait till like week 16 or something like that, and then get a head start on what's coming next, as teams don't make the playoffs or teams make the playoffs and they start hiring folks, so on and so forth.
So do you think some of it has to do with them benching Matt Ryan, who they traded for? I mean, just all of a sudden, like, I mean, I know Matt Ryan's been kind of struggling on and off, but that benching was kind of a surprise. Like, I wonder if that had something to do with it as well.
So I was definitely surprised by it, but from what I've read, it had some injury related issues there, right? Like, he was supposedly hurt, shoulder, but then again, that could have been a cover up, right? That could have been a, hey, we benched you, but, you know, because you're Matt Ryan, we're going to say you're injured, and that's what caused it, right?
And that's what the Giants did with Tony. You know, they said he was hurt, but he wasn't, so.
Yep. So there's that piece. I think he's a good coach. He'll be an offensive coordinator probably somewhere next year if he wants to. It was just probably time. I think this was without a doubt his make-or-break year, and he kind of banked it on Matt Ryan, which didn't make sense. But so there's that piece right now. The hiring of Jeff Saturday, I was completely blown away. I thought it was like, you know, the Adam Schefter account, right? I thought it was that I was getting pranked. Because although he was a great center, we'll always remember him as Peyton Manning center. And he has been coaching high school. From what I've read, his high school record hasn't been the greatest. I think he's at like some private school for him locally. It's never been done, right? Where someone goes from no NFL coaching experience to being a head coach. Now, I get it's an interim basis, but there's all kinds of things going around about, you know, why would you do this? And you've even got, man, you've got Reggie Wayne, who, albeit Reggie Wayne is only in his first year of coaching in the NFL because he's a wide receivers coach there in Indy. You know, you could have used a guy like him, you know, a Colt great. Maybe the staff doesn't have a lot of big names with experience and stuff like that as they have in the past. But, it was without a doubt very, very shocking. The hiring of Jeff Saturday definitely caught me off guard. I think that proves even more. Let's say he turns it around and they're amazing, right? Then feel good story. Whatever, they're going to hire him as a permanent coach, and let's say he's great, so on and so forth. But more than likely what's going to happen is he's not going to be good. They're going to be just as bad as they have been, even though they beat us. Then they'll have a head start on coaches for next year. The thing with them, I think the most interesting thing, which it sounds like they're going to keep him, is Chris Ballard, right? GM, former Chiefs personnel. You know, former Chiefs scouting department personnel, is they have to get a quarterback, right? There's no way around it. They've been ducking it for years. I get maybe they weren't confident in any of the guys, and maybe they might be right on some of the guys that they passed on. But whoever comes to this team next year has to have an understanding of we have to get a quarterback, a younger quarterback that's going to be our guy for at minimum like 2 to 4 years. So yeah, to answer your question, hiring of Jeff Saturday is crazy, but I mean, hey, he knows more about football than most of the guys, you know, for sure that we know, right? But let's say probably most of the guys in the NFL. But yeah, going from coaching high school kids,
he's been to the Super Bowl, and I think he won a Super Bowl too. So
yeah, I mean, and he's probably going to eventually be, if he's not already in there, Hall of Famer, Hall of Fame center. So, hey, if he can call up Peyton and be like, "Hey, Peyton, I'm supposed to talk crap on Monday night with your brother. You want to come be a consultant for me for plays?" Because that's the biggest part, right, is they have no one on their staff that's ever called plays since Frank Reich called plays. And their, I think, passing coordinator is the one that's going to be calling plays for the first time ever. So,
right, I didn't see that part, yeah.
A lot of craziness there in Indy.
So, I guess real quick before we end up ending this episode out, but as prediction as who would be number three on head coach, do you think it would be Cliff Kingsbury, or who do you think else might be?
Man, like, I shouldn't say I'd love to say, right?
But, I know, right?
Josh McDaniels, like, that team is a shipwreck, right? They've blown three humongous leads from NFL standards, and have lost games. But I just don't see Mark Davis pulling the trigger on someone in year one, right? That sounds really bad. I probably shouldn't say pulling the trigger. But
we'll just remove that from the
– yeah. If it happens. So, say – yeah, I don't see him firing, you know, his first-year coach, right? So, man, like, Cliff is up there. Cliff is definitely, you know, on the hot seat. I know he just got a big-time deal. But Arizona should be better than what they are. So, yeah, I mean, aside from – like I said, I don't think it's going to happen with McDaniels, even though it probably should. You need to talk about Hackett. I heard some folks, you know, talking about Green Bay's coach, which no one, they're not going to fire LaFleur at all, because once Rodgers is done at the end of this year, probably he's the future. So, yeah, I think that you'd have to go with Cliff Kingsbury. I think if they're not up there with maybe like in second place in that division, or heck, I guess they could end up in first too, right? Mm-hmm. They could overcome Seattle. But, yeah, I think he probably is next on the hot seat.
On the chop block, yeah.
Yep. What do you think?
No, that's what I went with too. I think that I honestly thought I had them at number two. I think a lot of people thought that he would be number two before Frank Reich, because that was kind of more a surprise. But I'm right there with you. You know, Josh McDaniels being, you know, this is first year, I think that would be more of an end-of-season move, which I think we talked about before. But if there's any other one, at least – that I can think of, at least right now, that would be during the season, it would probably be Cliff Kingsborough, just because it seems like they are underperforming for what they have. Yeah, I know they had DeAndre Hopkins on, you know, IR for a while. You know, he's now right. he's
spending doing well.
He's doing well. It's just inconsistency on that offensive part. You know, they just traded for Robbie Anderson. What, he's had two catches for less than 10 yards, I think, two catches right. for 9 yards. I mean, so it's just they've been, you know, kind of still of a mess. So, yeah, I could see him just being probably the next person. All right, so with that being said, that actually concludes today's episode of the Red and Yellow Kingdom podcast. We will be back here soon with our preview of the Jacksonville Jaguars Week 10 game coming up this Sunday here at Arrowhead. Literally the first noon game on Arrowhead this year, I will point out, too. Everything has been late afternoon or night at Arrowhead. So
right, sure has.
Crazy that this mid-November is your first noon game we have there at Arrowhead. So interesting. Looks like we might be having a special guest, maybe Jacksonville Jaguars fan, possibly.
Yeah, for sure. Trying to sign him for a one-day contract.
Right, trying to sign him. So, so keep a lookout on that. We might be having a Jags special guest on to talk about his team, what he looks forward to in this matchup against the Chiefs. With that being said, thanks again for listening today. Don't forget to follow our podcast and go Chiefs.